heart of the Shire. A few creatures came and looked at them when the fire had died away. A fox passing through the wood on business of his own stopped several minutes and sniffed. "Oh, Bets," he thought. "Well, what next? I've heard of strange doings in this land, but I've seldom heard of a hobbit sleeping out of doors under a tree. 3 of them. There's something mighty queer behind this." He was quite right, but he never found out any more about it. The morning came, pale and clammy. Frodo woke up first and found that a tree root had made a hole in his back and that his neck was stiff. "Walking for pleasure? Why didn't I drive?" he thought, as he usually did at the beginning of an expedition. "And all my beautiful feather beds are sold to the Sackville Bagginses. These tree roots would do them good," he stretched. "Wake up, hobbits," he cried. "It's a beautiful morning." "What's beautiful about it?" said Pippin, peering over the edge of his blanket with one eye. "Sam, get breakfast ready for 9:30. Have you got the bath water hot?" Sam jumped up, looking rather bleary. "No, sir, I haven't, sir," he said. Frodo stripped the blankets from Pippin and rolled him over, and then walked off to the edge of the wood. Away eastward the sun was rising red out of the mist that lay thick on the world. Touched with gold and red, the autumn trees seemed to be sailing rootless in a shadowy sea. A little below him to the left, the road ran down steeply into a hollow and disappeared. When he returned, Sam and Pippin had got a good fire going. "Water!" shouted Pippin. "Where's the water?"
"I don't keep water in my pocket," said Frodo.
"We thought you had gone to find some," said Pippin, busy setting out the food and cups. "You'd better go now."
"You can come too," said Frodo, "and bring all the water bottles."
There was a stream at the foot of the hill. They filled their bottles and the small camping kettle at a little fall where the water fell a few feet over an outcrop of grey stone. It was icy cold, and they spluttered and puffed as they bathed their faces and hands. When their breakfast was over, and their packs all trussed up again, it was after 10 o'clock, and the day was beginning to turn fine and hot. They went down the slope and across the stream where it dived under the road, and up the next slope, and up and down another shoulder of the hills, and by that time their cloaks, blankets, water, food, and other gear already seemed a heavy burden. The day's march promised to be warm and tiring work. After some miles, however, the road ceased to roll up and down. It climbed to the top of a steep bank in a weary, zigzagging sort of way, and then prepared to go down for the last time. In front of them they saw the lower lands dotted with small clumps of trees that melted away in the distance to a brown woodland haze. They were looking across the woody end toward the Brandywine River. The road wound away before them like a piece of string.
"The road goes on forever," said Pippin, "but I can't without a rest. It's high time for lunch."
He sat down on the bank at the side of the road and looked away east into the haze, beyond which lay the river, and the end of the shire in which he had spent all his life. Sam stood by him. His round eyes were wide open, for he was looking across lands he had never seen to a new horizon.
"Do elves live in those woods?" he asked.
"Not that I've ever heard," said Pippin.
Frodo was silent. He too was gazing eastward along the road, as if he'd never seen it before. Suddenly he spoke, aloud, but as if to himself, saying slowly, "The road goes ever on and on, down from the door where it began. Now far ahead the road has gone, and I must follow, if I can, pursuing it with weary feet, until it joins some larger way where many paths and errands meet, and whither then I cannot say."
"That sounds like a bit of old Bilbo's rhyming," said Pippin. "Or is it one of your imitations? It doesn't sound altogether encouraging."
"I don't know," said Frodo. "It came to me then, as if I was making it up. But I may have heard it long ago. Certainly it reminds me very much of Bilbo in the last years, before he went away. He used often to say that there was only one road, that it was like a great river. Its springs were at every doorstep, and every path was its tributary. It's a dangerous business, Frodo, going out of your door," he used to say.
You step into the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to. Do you realize that this is the very last path that goes through Mirkwood, and that if you let it, it might take you to the Lonely Mountain, or even further, and to worse places? He used to say that on the path outside the front door at Bag End, especially after he'd been out for a long walk. Well, the road won't sweep me anywhere for an hour at least, said Pippin, unslinging his pack. The others followed his example, putting their packs against the bank and their legs out into the road. After a rest, they had a good lunch, and then more rest. The sun was beginning to get low, and the light of afternoon was on the land as they went down the hill. So far, they'd not met a soul on the road. This way was not much used, being hardly fit for carts, and there was little traffic to the woody end. They'd been jogging along again for an hour or more when Sam stopped a moment as if listening. They were now on level ground, and the road, after much winding, lay straight ahead through grassland sprinkled with tall trees, outliers of the approaching woods. "I can hear a pony or a horse coming along the road behind," said Sam. They looked back, but the turn of the road prevented them from seeing far. "I wonder if that is Gandalf coming after us," said Frodo. But even as he said it, he had a feeling that it was not so, and a sudden desire to hide from the view of the rider came over him. "It may not matter much," he said apologetically, "but I would rather not be seen on the road by anyone. I'm sick of my doings being noticed and discussed. And if it is Gandalf," he added as an afterthought, "we can give him a little surprise, to pay him out for being so late. Let's get out of sight." The other two ran quickly to the left and down into a little hollow not far from the road. There they lay flat. Frodo hesitated for a second. Curiosity or some other feeling was struggling with his desire to hide. The sound of hooves drew nearer. Just in time, he threw himself down in a patch of long grass behind a tree that overshadowed the road. Then he lifted his head and peered cautiously above one of the great roots. Round the corner came a black horse. No hobbit pony, but a full-sized horse, and on it sat a large man who seemed to crouch in the saddle, wrapped in a great black cloak and hood, so that only his boots in the high stirrups showed below. His face was shadowed and invisible. When it reached the tree and was level with Frodo, the horse stopped. The riding figure sat quite still with its head bowed, as if listening. From inside the hood came a noise as of someone sniffing to catch an elusive scent. The head turned from side to side of the road. A sudden, unreasoning fear of discovery laid hold of Frodo, and he thought of his ring. He hardly dared to breathe, and yet the desire to get it out of his pocket became so strong that he began slowly to move his hand. He felt that he had only to slip it on, and then he would be safe. The advice of Gandalf seemed absurd. Bilbo had used the ring. "And I am still in the Shire," he thought, as his hand touched the chain on which it hung. At that moment the rider sat up and shook the reins. The horse stepped forward, walking slowly at first, and then breaking into a quick trot. Frodo crawled to the edge of the road and watched the rider, until he dwindled into the distance. He could not be quite sure, but it seemed to him that suddenly, before it passed out of sight, the horse turned aside and went into the trees on the right. "Well, I call that very queer and indeed disturbing," said Frodo to himself, as he walked towards his companions. Pippin and Sam had remained flat in the grass and had seen nothing, so Frodo described the rider and his strange behavior. "I can't say why, but I felt certain he was looking or smelling for me, and also I felt certain that I didn't want him to discover me. I've never seen or felt anything like it in the Shire before." "But what has one of the big people got to do with us?" said Pippin. "And what is he doing in this part of the world?" "There are some men about," said Frodo. "Down in the South Farthing they have had trouble with big people, I believe. But I have never heard of anything like this rider. I wonder where he comes from."
"Begging your pardon," put in Sam suddenly, "I know where he comes from. It's from Hobbiton that this here black rider comes, unless there's more than one, and I know where he's going to.
"What do you mean?" said Frodo sharply, looking at him in astonishment. "Why didn't you speak up before?"
"I've only just remembered, sir. It was like this. When I got back to our hole yesterday evening with the key, my dad, he says to me, 'Hello, Sam,' he says. 'I thought you were away with Mr. Frodo this morning. There's been a strange customer asking for Mr. Baggins of Bag End, and he's only just gone. I've sent him on to Bucklebury. Not that I liked the sound of him. He seemed mighty put out when I told him Mr. Baggins had left his old home for good. Hissed at me, he did. It gave me quite a shudder.' 'What sort of fellow was he?' says I to the gaffer. 'I don't know,' says he, 'but he wasn't a hobbit. He was tall and black-like, and he stooped over me. I reckon it was one of the big folk from foreign parts. He spoke funny.' 'I couldn't stay to hear more, sir, since you were waiting, and I didn't give much heed to it myself. The gaffer is getting old, and more than a bit blind, and it must have been near dark when this fellow came up the hill and found him taking the air at the end of our row. I hope he hasn't done no harm, sir, nor me.'
The gaffer can't be blamed anyway, said Frodo. As a matter of fact, I heard him talking to a stranger who seemed to be inquiring for me, and I nearly went and asked him who it was. I wish I had, or you'd told me about it before. I might have been more careful on the road.
Still, there may be no connection between this rider and the gaffer's stranger, said Pippin. We left Hobbiton secretly enough, and I don't see how he could have followed us. What about the smelling, sir? Said Sam. And the gaffer said he was a black chap.
I wish I had waited for Gandalf, Frodo muttered. But perhaps it would have only made matters worse.
Then you know or guess something about this rider? Said Pippin, who had caught the muttered words.
I don't know, and though I'd rather not guess, said Frodo.
All right, cousin Frodo. You can keep your secret for the present, if you want to be mysterious. In the meanwhile, what are we to do? I should like a bite and a sup, but somehow I think we'd better move on from here. Your talk of sniffing riders with invisible noses has unsettled me.
Yes, I think we'll move on now, said Frodo, but not on the road, in case that rider comes back or another follows him. We ought to do a good step more today. Buckland is still miles away.
The shadows of the trees were long and thin on the grass as they started off again. They now kept a stone's throw to the left of the road and kept out of sight of it as much as they could. But this hindered them, for the grass was thick and tussocky, and the ground uneven, and the trees began to draw together into thickets. The sun had gone down red behind the hills at their backs, and evening was coming on before they came back to the road at the end of the long level over which it had run straight for some miles. At that point it bent left and went down into the lowlands of the Yale, making for Stock, but a lane branched right, winding through a wood of ancient oak trees on its way to Woodhall.
"That is the way for us," said Frodo.
Not far from the road meeting, they came on the huge hulk of a tree. It was still alive and had leaves on the small branches that it had put out round the broken stumps of its long fallen limbs. But it was hollow and could be entered by a great crack on the side away from the road. The hobbits crept inside and sat there upon a floor of old leaves and decayed wood. They rested and had a light meal, talking quietly and listening from time to time. Twilight was about them as they crept back to the lane. The west wind was sighing in the branches. Leaves were whispering. Soon the road began to fall gently but steadily into the dusk. A star came out above the trees and the darkening east before them. They went abreast and in step to keep up their spirits. After a time, as the stars grew thicker and brighter, the feeling of disquiet left them, and they no longer listened for the sound of hooves. They began to hum softly, as hobbits have a way of doing as they walk along, especially when they are drawing near to home at night. With most hobbits, it is a supper song or a bed song, but these hobbits hummed a walking song, though not, of course, without any mention of supper and bed. Bilbo Baggins had made the words to a tune that was as old as the hills, and taught it to Frodo as they walked in the lanes of the water valley and talked about adventure.
Upon the hearth the fire is red, beneath the roof there is a bed, but not yet weary are our feet, still round the corner we may meet a sudden tree or a standing stone that none have seen but we alone. Tree and flower and leaf and grass, let them pass, let them pass. Hill and water and the sky, pass them by, pass them by. Still round the corner there may wait a new road or a secret gate, and though we pass them by today, tomorrow we may come this way and take the hidden paths that run towards the moon or to the sun. Apple, thorn, and knot, and sloe, let them go, let them go. Sand and stone, and pool, and dell, fare you well, fare you well. Home is behind, the world ahead, and there are many paths to tread, through shadows to the edge of night, until the stars are all alight, then world behind and home ahead, we'll wander back to home and bed. Mist and twilight, cloud and shade, away shall fade, away shall fade. Fire and lamp and meat and bread, and then to bed, and then to bed. The song ended.
And now to bed, and now to bed,
sang Pippin in a high voice.
Hush, said Frodo, I think I hear hooves again.
They stopped suddenly and stood as silent as tree shadows, listening. There was a sound of hooves in the lane, some way behind, but coming slow and clear down the wind. Quickly and quietly they slipped off the path and ran into the deeper shade under the oak trees. "Don't let us go too far," said Frodo. "I don't want to be seen, but I want to see if it's another Black Rider."
"Very well," said Pippin, "but don't forget the sniffing."
The hooves drew nearer. They had no time to find any hiding place better than the general darkness under the trees. Sam and Pippin crouched behind the large tree bole, while Frodo crept back a few yards towards the lane. It showed grey and pale, a line of fading light through the wood. Above it the stars were thick in the dim sky, but there was no moon. The sound of hoofs stopped. As Frodo watched, he saw something dark pass across the lighter space between two trees and then halt. It looked like the black shade of a horse led by a smaller black shadow. The black shadow stood close to the point where they had left the path, and it swayed from side to side. Frodo thought he heard the sound of snuffling. The shadow bent to the ground and then began to crawl towards him. Once more the desire to slip on the ring came over Frodo, but this time it was stronger than before, so strong that, almost before he realized what he was doing, his hand was groping in his pocket. But at that moment there came a sound like mingled song and laughter. Clear voices rose and fell in the starlit air. The black shadow straightened up and retreated. It climbed onto the shadowy horse and seemed to vanish across the lane into the darkness on the other side. Frodo breathed again.
"Elves!" exclaimed Sam in a hoarse whisper. "Elves, sir!"
He would have burst out of the trees and dashed off towards the voices if they had not pulled him back.
"Yes, it is elves," said Frodo.
"One can meet them sometimes in the woody end. They don't live in the Shire, but they wander into it in spring and autumn, out of their own lands, away beyond the Tower Hills. I am thankful that they do. You did not see, but that Black Rider stopped just here and was actually crawling towards us when the song began. As soon as he heard the voices, he slipped away."
"What about the elves?" said Sam, too excited to trouble about the rider. "Can't we go and see them?"
"Listen, they are coming this way," said Frodo. "We have only to wait." The singing drew nearer. One clear voice rose now above the others. It was singing in the fair elven tongue, of which Frodo knew only a little, and the others knew nothing. Yet the sound, blending with a melody, seemed to shape itself in their thoughts into words which they only partly understood. This was the song as Frodo heard it.
"Snow White, Snow White, O Lady Clear, O Queen beyond the western seas.
O light to us that wander here amid the world of